This week on Art in the Air, we feature lifelong Gary artist Corey Hagelberg discussing his upcoming exhibit at the Chesterton Arts Center in August. Next, we feature artist Sanaa Brown Bowers, whose realistic portrait renderings are mixed with pop culture backgrounds. Our spotlight is on the Depot Museum and Gallery's next exhibit, featuring photographic artist Sue Raymond, opening August 12th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at LakeshorePublicRadio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available on our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our shows are available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for more information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight. She's going to have an exhibit coming up and going to tell us about that at the Depot in Beverly Shores. She's a photographer. After leaving her 35-year career in business, she opened a new chapter in life by doing creative things. Please welcome to Art in the Air Susan Raymond. And along with her is the gift shop manager and director for the Nancy Schwab. Welcome both of you to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, Susan, we want to have just a real brief synopsis about you, and then we'll move on to the exhibit that's coming up at the Depot.
Well, as you mentioned, I had a 35-year career in business, 30 years in my own business, retired about 10 years ago, and decided to learn photography. It came about, we were on a trip in India, and I never was the one to take shots. And I grabbed the camera from my husband. I was just flabbergasted by the beauty. Started shooting, couldn't wait to get home to see it. And they were the world's ugliest photos. And I vowed I was going to learn how to shoot. And I was coming back. And that started my love affair with taking photos of faces that are worn, that have a lot of history behind them. There's a lot of soul behind them. But I found that I most was drawn to travel in very exotic places to find these people. And when times were that I couldn't travel all the time, I then developed a passion for photographing flowers, not outside, but setting up a studio in my place. And most of my experience has been self-taught. I've had some workshops that I've been on. I've been to several classes at the one and only school in Chicago. But really, a lot of it has been through YouTubes and reading books and just I'm also coordinating a class with some others at Northwestern University for continuing ed. So that's how it all evolved. And that passion also grew into photographing dance.
What camera do you use?
I have the Sony, it's a full frame, the A7R 4.
So what made you decide to work with the flowers in the studio? They are just so glorious. You just capture them so beautifully.
Thank you. I equate, this might sound like, how does she tie it in? But they remind me in many ways of shooting faces that are interesting.
And they look like dancers, actually. They look like dancers to me, the flowers.
They have a personality. Many of them have a movement and a flow. You see that in their stems sometimes, or it's just how they're facing, whether they've been facing the sun and that's how they grew. But I'm looking for special characteristics when I pick out my flowers. So I go to several florists, and they know by now what I like, and that's how it evolved.
Now, yeah, I see these are like in studio shots a lot of times. Do you have a small lighting kit that you work with the flowers?
I've gotten carried away with lighting. I have now taken over most of my dining room and half of my living room. I have all kinds of lighting, and some of my first photos that I still love were literally with cheap flashlights when I didn't know anymore. So the fancy lights don't necessarily make for the better shots. But learning how to use the lighting was critical.
Right. Well, light is everything. I'm a lighting designer in theater as well as a director, and so I understand that probably more. And it's funny, Esther asked you the question about what camera. Usually that's my question as a photographer myself. So you have an exhibit coming up at the Depot, and let's talk a little bit about that and the times and dates and what we hope to see there.
Sure. So Susan's show opens Friday the 12th from 5 to 7. And runs for 3 weeks. And then also that evening at 7 o'clock on the front lawn, we have Carnessa J. Carnes, and she is a poetress, and she's going to be reading some poetry. We also have in our museum an exhibit on the past resorts and beaches of Beverly Shores with lots of vintage photographs. So it's really going to be a nice destination, a nice thing to do on a Friday night.
And while we have you talking, Nancy, let's just ask, what's anything new going on at the gift shop?
Oh, there's always something new. I've got more ceramicists. I've got some new jewelry, beautiful things made from nuts that are shaved and dyed. And of course, some more woodworking products. So, and lots of cards from past artists, Christina Nowski and Laurel Izzard, who has had a show at the Depot, and Stephen Schwab. So there's a lot of, and prints. So we continue to support our artists.
Very good. Well, Susan, back to you real quickly. After this exhibit, what are some of the things you have for your future plans and maybe some photography that you haven't done yet?
Question. Well, plans. I have plans to travel to Ethiopia in January and a possible trip to Guatemala. As far as what's next, I am now starting a new project. It's hard to explain. Each of my projects, as you may have noticed, I have two different types of flowers in the exhibit. One are portraits, let's put it that way, of flowers. But the other, it looks like the flowers are floating in clouds, and I'll leave it at that.
Very good. So just recap one at a time, how we can find your work online, and let's recap when the show runs again at the Depot.
The show is August 12th from 5 to 7, and as you mentioned, at Beverly Shores at the Depot. My work can be found on my website at Sue Raymond. And that's SueRemanMan, portfolio.com.
Very good. And you can find it at the Depot, which, of course, is right there on Broadway and almost just off of US 12, 520 South Broadway, Beverly Shores. Opening reception again is August 12th, 5 to 7, and I'll be running through. Thank you both for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you so much.
A Spotlight Extra. The Valparaiso Creative Council and the Valparaiso Skate Park Coalition is sponsoring a skate fundraiser on Sunday, August 7th from 12 to 3 p.m. Butterfield Pavilion in Fairgrounds Park. Put on your wheels, roll down for a carnival-style event with food, auctions, skateboard demos, and lots of great activities for the whole family. So clear your schedule on Sunday, August 7th, and roll on in. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
We would like to welcome back to Art on the Air, Corey Hagelberg. Corey's work addresses social and environmental issues along the southern shore of Lake Michigan. Corey and Kate Land developed the Calumet Artists Residency, which is an artist in residence program created with the goal of enhancing the local community through the arts. They have hosted over 40 artists to do community-based projects and have also created their own public artworks and projects. Thank you, Corey, for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. Hi, Corey.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for having me.
We're so happy to have you. Well, you know, you visited us a long time ago when we did the show live in the studio back in 2019. So this will be just like a fresh turn of the page. So we're going to have you introduce yourself. Tell us about your background bio before we get into some of the current projects you're working on. So how you got from where you were to where you are now, Corey?
All right. Well, thanks, Larry. So I'm a local artist, born and raised in Gary here. And a lot of my work involves local issues. So, you know, grew up in the Miller neighborhood of Gary, went off to Ball State, graduated from high school and drain at 2000, in 2002, went off to Ball State, got a sculpture degree. So I got a degree in sculpture and then went back in 2010 and got a degree and master's in printmaking.
So what drew you to printmaking? When did you do that, in grade school or high school?
I didn't. I was pretty unfamiliar with it until I got to Ball State. I had a couple friends who were really good at it, and Ball State has a really strong printmaking program. At that time, it was led by Sarojini Johnson and David Johnson. And I think I was just really struck, especially woodcut. You know, most of the printmaking I do is woodcut. Just struck by the boldness of the energy, or of the imagery, the energy of the carving, just the kind of natural qualities of the product.
It's a great brain game too, because it's all in reverse. So
it's, yeah,
really very thoughtful.
Yeah. And I, you know, for me, I liked it because it was just simple. It's something that people have worked with since paper was invented. So it's a very old and traditional material. And it's, you know, an important invention in the history of humanity. And so, you know, I connect it back to a lot of nature themes, because it is a very kind of natural process, and just really enjoy woodcut.
Yeah, I start doing printmaking with my kindergarten students because it's so magical and it's so immediate. I mean, they see the results right away, and they are, I mean, they're always impressive.
So, Corey, like jumping ahead to college, which you did, how about while growing up? Did you do anything arts, like in your younger grades, like in elementary, high school, throughout that?
Oh, yeah. I was always doing some sort of art. Even as a kid, I had a darkroom that was in my bedroom. My grandfather made a photography enlarger back in the 40s, actually. And it was, you know, just beautiful, beautifully crafted. He was a machinist, and I still have it. And, you know, when I was in high school, it was probably very unhealthy, but I installed a ventilation system and dark out windows and, like tables that came down, and I had a dark room. And then I did kiln work in the garage. I did like glass fusing and slumping and making beads with torches. And very early on, I was, very interested in materials. I come from the family businesses in playground building. So my dad is part owner of a playground manufacturing company. So from a very early age, like 13 or 14, I'd be out on those construction sites, just learning about different processes. So it really made sense for me to kind of go into sculpture in undergrad to kind of continue that exploration of materials and different kinds of processes.
Of course, playgrounds are, and playground equipment is actually 3D sculptures to a certain degree. So probably that's a great inspiration.
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, the process of building a playground, there's often, you know, a really great energy around it. Certainly it's, you know, 3D design, you know, implemented in the real world and in a beautiful way. And, you know, playgrounds, there's a real creativity and art to the design of playgrounds. So it really did translate into a lot of the community work that I do today, just kind of trying to bring that same kind of energy that surrounded the playgrounds.
I guess they gave you a very good background too in stability, because they have to be anchored really well. So I'm sure that helps when you're doing these community projects, having that wonderful background.
Yeah, it helps. You know, I do my best to try to make things last. And so, having that understanding of how things should be built is important for sure.
So you've been in Miller pretty much all your life, except when you were away at college. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is.
And so, and I remember we got reconnected at the South Shore Arts exhibit, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And you really talked about Gary and that whole thing with a passion. So maybe share some of those thoughts with us that you shared at that event.
I think what I shared was some of the community work that I'm involved with the Calumet Artist Residency. As you mentioned, about 10 years ago, me and my former partner, Kate, we purchased these houses here. And immediately started sharing them with artists. And that developed into the Calumet Artist Residency, where we've had dozens of people staying here and doing various community projects. And a lot of that has evolved into kind of food security work, local community gardens, and trying to create materials that deal with environmental issues and climate change, like zines and coloring books, and things to, you know, get in the hands of youth to try to address these issues at an early age in our community. So, a lot of my work today involves community garden. We manage a community garden at Brothers Keeper Shelter at 22nd and Broadway. This time of year, a large percentage of my time is spent there.
Are there a lot of children involved in the gardening? Is it intergenerational?
It is. You know, this year we've been blessed to be connected with the Gary Food Council. They have a junior master gardener program. So Mondays and Wednesday mornings, we're out there with youth, and so working on the garden, teaching about regenerative agriculture, about food security, about, you know, the basic skills of planting and harvesting. And it's just a wonderful thing to be part of. And the Gary Food Council, you can find them on Facebook. They've create a lot of energy this summer by sending youth interns and paying them to go work in a lot of the community gardens around Gary. So it's just been wonderful this summer, especially.
Dreaming of doing. Can I ask something about the garden really quickly? So is it primarily vegetables, or do you have fruit trees? I mean, what is involved in the garden? What have you put in?
So it's both. We have our annual vegetables, but then we've planted a lot of fruit and nut trees as well. The process that I'm most interested in is, you might call it regenerative agriculture or permaculture, which really focuses on perennial plants, often native, which are more resilient to drought or neglect. So we've planted 30 native fruit and nut trees there, plums, persimmons, pawpaws, service berries. And then we also do like tomatoes and squash and beans and, you know, the perennials like that as well.
So in Michigan City, they also did a program, and a lot of fruits and vegetables are not common to everybody's diets. And so in Michigan City, they had a chef come in, like do demos of how to prepare different items. Have you thought about, or are you doing any of that as well?
We've done some of that. We've made some videos with the Gary Food Council, like cooking show type stuff. Mm-hmm. And that is a huge nut to crack. And I think we're still, you know, working on that, but certainly we have worked with chefs and, you know, always looking for innovative ways to get the food that's grown to be made and to be delicious for folks to want to prepare it and eat healthy.
Now, you were recently at an exhibit at South Shore Arts, and besides the South Shore Nature Story, so tell us a little bit about what you had on exhibit there and how long that's going to be in place.
There's a show it's at the Center for Visual Performing Arts in Munster, South Shore Arts. It's called Nature Lovers, and it's on exhibit until August 27th. And in that show, I have mostly woodcuts. So as I mentioned before, you know, really my bread and butter of art making, the thing that people respond to the most is my woodcuts, my black and white woodcuts. So I think there's about 12 or 13 of them in there, some very large and some smaller, which tell sometimes specific stories. The Calumet region, there's a book that's 10 feet long there. It's an accordion style book, so it kind of looks like a Japanese screen in its form when it opens up. And it tells a story of the Grand Calumet River, how it was named after a peace pipe that the indigenous people smoked with the French missionary Father Marquette. And today it actually becomes a pipe, a giant culvert that disappears into the ground where it goes into U.S. Steel. So some tell specific stories like that. And then some are more, kind of quick plays on words, you know, have phrasing like think fast, nature will bury the past, and sort of talk about the dunes environment. And so there's a range. And then, you know, some are more kind of glorifications of the natural world, like trees, you know, more simplistic. So there's woodcuts. And then I've got one piece that is a material called biochar. And what biochar is, it's pure carbon. And when we talk about climate change, obviously a lot of what we talk about is carbon and keeping carbon out of the atmosphere. And so the process of making biochar from wood, generally waste wood or invasive species, as part of forestry practice, it keeps carbon down. It's carbon that is sequestered that you can sequester. And so I put it on display for folks to see and sort of to learn a little bit more about that practice. I think when we hear the term sequestering carbon, it can be very mysterious. So that piece is an attempt to sort of bring that a little bit closer to where people can see it and maybe get a grasp of what that means.
So the sculptures, Corey, that were at the Brouwer exhibit quite a few years ago, where are they installed anywhere today? I mean, they were so memorable. I really enjoyed them.
Thanks. No, they're not installed anywhere today. They're just kind of, they're to tell you the truth in storage. So, one of the problems about making large scale sculpture, I've made a lot of it over the last, I guess, 20 years. And yeah, it's so hard to find it a permanent home. I think there's one that's maybe at the Brouwer, and there's one that's at IUN, but there's a lot of them that are just sitting in storage.
I remember Kevin Firm we had on, and that was one of the discussions he has. It's like some of his pieces are in his brother's yard and everything. Well, besides your art, and we'll talk about some of the things you have coming up, of course, is you're also at IUN as a professor. So tell us about classes you teach and things like that going on there.
Yeah, I've been there since, I think it was 2014. So pushing 8 or 9 years now, and I've really taught a real gambit there. Everything from two-dimensional and three-dimensional foundations courses to sculpture, drawing. And right now, what I teach is printmaking and art appreciation courses. So that's a lot of fun. Printmaking is, within my wheelhouse, and it's something that I enjoy teaching to young people. And art appreciation is fun because it's a course with non-majors. So we get to talk about the essence of what is art, what are the purposes of art, what are the different ways you can look at art, and what are the different frameworks that you can develop an understanding of art through. Just to see the transformation of folks and how open-minded they are to different types of art is certainly one of the most rewarding parts of my whole job at IUN, because it's very consistent too, in seeing folks that become sort of more open-minded and are willing to take a step back and see that you can look at art in a lot of different ways.
True. And of course, the facilities there since the upgrade a few years ago are really phenomenal in the Arts and Science building.
So, Corey, do you have a direction for your next community endeavor?
A direction? What we've been working on primarily is this garden at Brothers Keeper. We call it Brothers Keeper Garden and Food Forest. So it's about a 1-acre property right on Broadway, less than a mile from IUN, in the Midtown neighborhood of Gary, which during Jim Crow was the segregated part of the city. African Americans were forced to live in Midtown. So developing that site into a place where we're celebrating the history of Midtown, so many historic figures, Richard Hatcher, the first Black mayor of a major city, Vivian Carter, who ran VJ Records, and so many other figures and stories are, in need of preserving. And so working with that site to develop into a place of food security for the neighborhood, collaboration between neighborhood partners, and celebrating the history of Midtown is really, where my primary focus is right now, and probably for the next 10 years at least, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now, you have some things coming up, and we don't want to give it away, but let's talk about what you have coming up at Chesterton Arts Center and give us some details about what we can see there and when those run.
All right. So, I have a show called The Design is Fine, The Design is Not Fine at the Chesterton Arts Center, and that opens August 4th and runs through September 20th. And that show is going to be, again, primarily black and white woodcuts, really trying to show different ones than are currently on display at South Shore Arts. That one's going to be quite a few. I mean, there's probably going to be 20 or more prints in that show. And the reception will be on August 13th from noon to 2 p.m. And there's something really exciting that's also going to happen as part of that Save the Dunes is celebrating their 70th anniversary this year. So Save the Dunes has another event that's going to happen on August 27th from 5 to 7 p.m. It's going to be a celebration of the 70th anniversary of Save the Dunes, but also I've been creating a 70th anniversary print. So we're going to unveil the print that day. And so it's been really wonderful to work with Nancy Moldenhauer, who is the director of Save the Dunes, and a really good friend. And she's been really great. And we've been working on that together recently.
And where will Corey? When they do the unveiling?
Oh, that'll be at the Chesterton Art Center during that show. Yeah, yeah. So, I'm looking forward to both of those events. The reception on August 13th, and then the Save the Dunes 70th anniversary on August 27th. And I also have a piece, that book that I described, that's at South Shore Arts, is also at the Porter County Museum. They just opened a beautiful new space in downtown Valparaiso, right across from the courthouse. And they have a show called Calumet Voices. And the book is going to be on display there until the end of September. And then it's going to go to the Field Museum, actually. They're going to bring elements of that show to Chicago, to the Field Museum. So it'll be really nice to be involved with that as well.
Anything you're looking forward to doing, you know, projects beyond August and September, things you're working on or things you're dreaming of doing? Tell us about that. We have just about a minute left, and also tell us about how people can find you on the internet and contact you.
Okay. Another project that I have coming up is I'll be working with Purdue Northwest. They're purchasing a big print, the Hoosier Slide print, and I'll be working with them to tell the story of the Hoosier Slide and do some programming. We're going to also work with them. I have a zine with local artist Casey King called Fill Your Town with Fields of Sunflowers. So trying to do some of that work with them as well, planting sunflowers. And then you can find me at CoreyHagelberg.com and also CalumetArtistResidency.com, and also both of those on Facebook.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art of the Year and sharing your art journey and what's coming up. Of course, the new closest one is the Chesterton Arts Center at August 4th through September 30th with a reception on the 13th, 12 to 2. Design is fine. Design is not fine. Corey Hagelberg, thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
With pleasure, we welcome Sanaa Brown Bowers to Art on the Air. Sanaa uses her artwork as a form of art therapy, both for herself and the viewers. A majority of the themes or stories in her work features herself and her family. Sanaa's artwork merges the whimsical and the realistic and is about exploring textures on canvas in the form of oversized wooden shadow boxes, what she calls family altars. They are a combination of mixed media, incorporating acrylic and oils, as well as paper collage, including 3D elements, lighting, and realistic portraiture with a whimsical pop art edge. Very, very exciting. Thank you, Sanaa, for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Oh, we're so excited.
Sanaa, we always like to do is find out a little bit about you for our audience and your whole origin story and like where you grew up, schools, things, family, and like I always like to say, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about yourself.
Actually, I grew up in New York City. I was born and raised in Queens. And my mom was an artist, but she never pursued it because she worked for the NYPD. And she was an investigator for the police department. And she was afraid to kind of leave her stable career and pursue her art full time. But she always encouraged us to be creative. And that was something that she did really well, because she, you know, from when we were children, she would just constantly encourage us to like make and create things. So we had to make like the Christmas tree ornaments and the pillows and the clothes and everything. So like all my brothers can sew to this day, and they're like 60 years old. So like they make their own clothes and stuff. But
those are like such fabulous memories, I think.
Yeah.
Family activities.
It was Yeah, it was so creative. So I didn't know I wanted to be an artist, but we have a lot of entrepreneurs in my family, but my mom, again, she kind of, even though we did creative things, she steered us in the direction to be take a more stable career. So she didn't necessarily like encourage us to do that because she was kind of afraid for us to like live that kind of lifestyle. So when I was 17 years old and graduated from high school, I went to Fashion Institute of Technology, and I studied fashion photography and fine art. But after the first semester, I ended up dropping out of college because I wasn't sure if I wanted to do that. So I ended up taking a couple of years off, and I moved to Texas, relocated to Texas. And then when I was in Texas, I started repoing people's cars. And once I got on my own, started living on my own and working like a regular job, I just finally realized that that's not what I wanted to do with my life. I was like, I do not want to have a desk job. It just so I just took a leap of faith and I started painting at home. And I just taught myself how to paint. Like, I never took any classes. I tell people I was like an in the closet artist. Like, nobody even knew I could paint because I had like this whole secret lifestyle of like painting at home and just keeping all my artwork to myself. And I end up, you know, just through prayer and my relationship with God, I just really felt like the Lord was trying to tell me to like step out on faith and to do my artwork full time. So I ended up getting fired from that repo job. And during the time I got fired, I just decided that I was not going to go back to work for anybody again. And I was going to put everything that I have into my gift and make it work. And I tell people I operate like I don't have a backup plan. And that was what made me even more persistent, because I feel like sometimes when people operate like they have a backup plan, they have something to fall back on, they don't give it their all. And I operate like there's no backup plan because I said, this is the only thing that I feel like I could do well. So I have to make this work.
Yeah, so I didn't have a backup plan either. It was art, only art.
Yeah.
that was my backup plan.
That was my story. And so I just made it work. I tell people, like, I started going, I mean, I was like a hustle person. Like, I went to daycares in my area. I went to barbershops and I started doing murals. I was like, I will do a mural for free on your wall. You do not have to pay me. Just advertise for me, tell people about me. And I just started like literally hitting the pavement. I started doing portraits for people. I would do them for free at first. I would do them for really, really inexpensive because I was trying to get my name out there. So in the beginning, it was a lot of like, you know, hustling and just doing things and not really getting paid that much money. But it ended up paying off because through all of that, it helped me to be very disciplined with my time and discipline with my business ethic and different things like that. And now it's like 14 years later, and I've been doing this, you know, I've been self-employed for like 14 years, and I really, really love what I do. So, you know, I wouldn't trade it in for the world, because I mean, I get to wake up every day and do what I love. So that's important to me.
So in school, like in elementary school and middle school, how, you know, what type of art classes were there? Were you attracted to it then? Because, you know, it sounds like at home you had great opportunities to create, but were they offered in school? Because I know, and I'm only asking because I didn't have my first art class until like seventh grade. It just wasn't really offered. So what was your early?
Well, you know, New York, I tell people New York City is very, I live in Texas. So New York City is really different than Texas because New York City, because the whole city's kind of geared toward the arts and entertainment and music. And there's the schools are like catered toward art. There's a lot of art infused in the children at a young age through like going to like, you know, plays or festivals or like, you know, so that was a part of me because of the region that I grew up in. So, but I didn't actually start pursuing art until I was in high school where, like in New York, you can go to art high school. So they have high schools that are just specifically art oriented, right? So like I took photography, I took fine art when I was in high school from the ninth grade to the 12th grade. And so they also helped me prepare your portfolio for college. Like they're very good about making sure the students are equipped to get into good colleges. But honestly, the crazy thing is that I did not like school. Like when I say hated school, I feel so bad for saying that right now, but I did not like school. Like my report card, I tell people it was like absent on test days, disturbance in class. Like, I did not like school, but I liked the art classes. And so it was funny because I did not do good in the regular subjects, but at art, I excelled. I won like the awards and all this kind of stuff. So I always tell people, like, with their kids, like, I believe in education, but I also believe in like having a healthy balance and help. If your kid is an entrepreneur, they have artistic gifts, to definitely cultivate that, because they may not be good in math or science and stuff, but if they excel at art, you know, you have to find some kind of way to merge that so that they can still feel like they're valuable, even if they don't necessarily like liberal arts. Because I did not learn the value of college until after, like, after years, then I ended up going back to college. And actually, 2018, I went back to college. And like, then I was, when I went back to college, I'm all like summa cum laude, you know, like I'm all AB student. And I do really good in college now, you know? So I think that sometimes it takes some students a little bit of time.
I agree.
To grasp it.
Tell us a little bit about what kind of art you do. Now, we have a portrait thing in the background. It looks like a family or something. But, and also, how has photography influenced you? I know you studied photography and everything like that, and I'm a photographer, so I'm always interested in that. But how you incorporate that in your work as a basis, or even use it as art?
So I was always interested in portraiture and photojournalism. So I would like Gordon Parks. Like, when I was 17 years old, I used to go to Barnes & Noble's and I used to look at the photography books of like journalism. And so what I wanted to do was, I actually wanted to do like photojournalism, because I like real life situations in photography. So the way that I incorporated photography is, I got just enough photography experience for me to use it in what I do today. So all of my portraits, I take the pictures of my clients and I take the pictures of myself. So if you look on my website, a lot of my paintings are self-portraits or portraits of my family, which are taken by me, because I'm painting realism. And when you paint realism, you have to have a very, very high quality digital image, right? If the image is blurry, when you zoom in, if that image is blurry, it's the quality of the painting is not going to be as realistic. Mm-hmm. So I use the photography for my paintings. And that is the base of all my artwork, is photography. I also do acrylic on canvas and mixed media, which is acrylic is water-based. And I do mixed media. So like a lot of my pieces, the ones on my site, you'll see like a lot of collaging with paper and a lot of frame building, which is what I call family altar. So there's mantle pieces that I make. Me and my husband turned our garage into a wood shop. So we actually build the mantles and make these huge, windowsill picture frames that are made out of wood and foam. And we actually make the framing a part of the artwork, so it becomes a part of the story as well. And so that's how I incorporate the photography into my stuff. But most of my stuff is, that you see on my site, is all like about me and my daughter's journey coming from New York to Texas, and it's about healing. So a lot of this stuff is about like different traumatic experiences that I've been through, different traumatic experiences she's been through, and how we've healed over the years. So I use the paintings as a way of like showing, making light of certain situations. And that's why I actually merge like the realism with like the funny, fantastical pop art.
So what was that experience? Like, how did you come about adding the pop element? Did you see it that way? I mean, was it kind of like, ooh, this is what I need to do? I mean, I think the marriage of both of them is so exciting, the way you
paint.
I just really love it. But what was the inspiration for it?
Well, the inspiration behind that is like, growing up in New York City, I grew up around a lot of cartoons, you know, a lot of like fantasy movies, television, things we used to watch. So to me, like, I would gravitate to things that are super colorful, you know, a lot of bold colors, and I'm a really, really comical person. So I wanted to tie in my personality and do something that was different and that was fun, right? Because I tell people the portrait part is the realism part, the serious part, but I want to get to the fun stuff. So when I'm painting, I make myself do the portrait first, because that's the hardest part. And then I want to get to the background. I want to get to the characters. I want to get to the fun, bubbly stuff, you know, and the words and the text. So to me, like, I wanted to be able to merge everything that I love into my artwork, and I didn't want to have to compromise and do away with something. So I had to figure out a way to make it look nice, like make it look cohesive and nice and tell a story together. So that was kind of my way of merging everything that I like so that I didn't have to like take this out or take that out. Cause I'm like, I like the realism. I love the realism. It looks alive. It looks like it's going to jump off the canvas. But if I put it up against this super pop art colors and this helmet and these sunglasses, I think that would look nice together. So I tried it and it ended up working. And when people see it in a gallery, they're like, wow, I thought that was a photograph, but it's not, it's a painting. And I think because of the pop art, it makes the painting look even more alive.
It does.
You know? Yeah.
So like, as you're doing the portrait, are you seeing like the shapes above the heads and the body? Do you know where you're going to go with the poppy sort of?
So my layout is this, that I do everything in the computer first, right? Mm-hmm. So what I do is I photograph myself and then I take that photograph and I design a background, right? That's gonna what background I want. Like, I don't know if you saw the one with the little girl. That's called Dear Diary. She's holding
Do you write the poetry and the quotes that are on your paintings?
Yes, I write everything. So again, I like poetry, I like words, I like text. I like three-dimensional, and I'm like merging everything that I like into the painting. So the one called Dear Diary with Liv, basically what I did was like I photographed her in the back, you know, playing around, acting like she's holding this cotton candy because I knew that I was going to compare her hair to cotton candy. So I photographed her with a stick in her hand, right? So she, and then what I did was I take that and then I put the background with the little sheet, right? I put that in the computer, I put her on top of there, then I put the text, right? So there's overlapping images of all the things that I'm gonna add, right? And then there's the text, there's the background with the sheet, there's her one image, and then there's the cotton candy that she's holding, then she has a tulle skirt on. So I overlap these images in the computer in Photoshop using about 5 or 6 images, and then I print that, right? So I print it, and then I put it on the canvas using this stuff called carbon paper, which transfers the image, right? So if I was to hand sketch all of this detail, it would take me like a week or two, right? But with the printout, I can get it transferred in like an hour, right? Because it's everything right here that you see just on a piece of black and white paper. And so once I put it on there, I put the carbon paper, I use a pencil or pen, and I just trace out the information that I need, and then I just start painting. So that speeds up my process so that I don't have all of this time put into like actually sketching it. Because for me, you know, I'm an artist. I get bored with working on something for, you know, 80 hours or like a month. It's like you get worn out and you're just like, oh, I'm tired. I don't even want to see it anymore. So for me, I learned how to speed up the process so that I could just start painting right away. And so that helps me to be able to like an hour to put that down and then automatically I'm just painting. The paintings, I paint really fast. So like I can get a painting done in like 40 to 60 hours because it's acrylic. So in between each layer, I'm blow drying, I'm adding layers. If you look on my Instagram, you'll see some of my videos of me, like process videos of like me working on the faces and stuff. And so each painting will take about maybe 60 hours. That's just the painting, not like the shadow box or anything like that. But yeah, I hope I answered that.
Yeah, no, it's like, I love the video too, because it just so illustrates the back and forth that you just spoke about.
What an interesting process by incorporating photography and Photoshop. I always have to ask what kind of camera you use.
Actually, I use my iPhone.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good too. So
you're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
The other thing I was going to ask you is about the culture shock of moving from New York City to, well, Fort Worth in Texas. So tell us just briefly about that.
Well, you know, I grew growing up in New York, it's like a giant melting pot of everything. You know, you have it's I love the city because you have easy access to everything. And then there's a lot of free things for, you know, for people. You like there's festivals, there's dance classes, there's just everything is there. And the culture is just awesome. But it lacks a lot of things at the same time, like the family, you know, like growing up in New York City as a kid, it was rough. You know, there's a lot of bullying, you know, there's a lot of influence. There's, you know, a lot of independence for the kids, you know, like at 13 years old, you know, which we're taking, if I want to go to high school in Manhattan, I'm taking the train by myself, you know, like all the way to Manhattan, like So the kids there, they grow up really fast because you have to travel places by yourself. They don't have a lot of bus transport, like in a lot of the rural states or, you know, states where they have different schools like Texas. So for me, I had a daughter at 21 years old, and I did not want to raise her in New York City because I knew that that was like a very rough lifestyle. So I said, well, I'm going to go to Texas and I'm going to raise her in an area that's a little bit more family oriented. When I came to Texas, I actually like really, really love Texas. But again, there's advantages and disadvantages of each place. You know, it's where we live at is we live in Saginaw area. So it's kind of rural. But once I moved here, I realized that I really like the country. Like I like cows. I like horses. Like I want to be able to go to the city, but I don't want to live in the city.
Right. The space, because I'm sure like having a studio that's adequate is just so, I mean, a studio right where you are rather. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like this is one room in my house, but my garage, we don't even have a garage anymore. We turn it into a wood shop. So it's like a 6 by 6 foot table that we have in there that I hold, because my canvases get bigger than this. They get like 9 feet, some of them. So we have a garage with a wood shop in it. And then I have a tool shed, and then I have a storage unit that I keep my artwork in. So there's a lot of space here that I wouldn't be able to have that space in New York City. And I didn't want to, and it also it's a thing about the peace of mind. Like I'm the type of person when I'm creating, like I can't have a lot of chaos around me because the I can't work in chaos. So working in an area where it's like I have a big backyard, I can take a break with the dogs, you know, I can like go take a walk, and it's like land and grass, and like I don't have to see people. Like I need that. But like you wouldn't be able to have that in like some big city like New York.
Right.
So it's the way I create. I always want to have that kind of space, because to me, I could always go to the city. But if I live in the city, you can't get away from it.
Right. Right. And all your work is like based on family. And so to be in your own house must be very inspiring as well. Like give you that level of comfort to really delve into your work.
Yeah. I love working from home. Like I don't think I'll ever like having an outside studio is great for some people because it's good to be able to disconnect. But I'm the type of person also I work really, really late at night. And sometimes I work overnight. Like most of the time when I'm working on my paintings, it's like I'll work overnight and then I'll stop at 8 o'clock in the morning and I'll sleep at 8 a.m. or 10 a.m. and then I go to sleep till, you know, 1 o'clock, and then I'll get back up. So I like working overnight on my stuff. I don't like working like I won't do 8 to 5, you know? So
I know I find those really early. I find those magical hours for me as well. Those evening.
Yeah.
Hours.
Something about those midnight hours when everything's quiet.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
You talked a little about your process, but let's say someone's coming to you to like you have a family portrait back to you right now that you see. So do you go and photograph them maybe on location and do that before, or how does that process work? Like if someone wants to get their portrait, either individually or a family portrait.
Yeah, definitely. So basically a part of my package is the photography. So I go photograph them, or sometimes they could give me a photograph. But again, I specifically tell them that, like, I have a couple that gave me like a picture of like them and their kids when they were, it was probably like, you know, like when their kids were smaller. So maybe the picture was like 8 years old, and it was, you know, it was when they had the 35 millimeter, it wasn't digital. So the problem with the picture is that when I'm taking a picture this size, and you know what happens when you zoom it in, it's blurry, it's pixelated. So the quality of the painting is not going to be as clear as a digital. So that's why I like to have that control in my hand, because I'm telling my customers, if I do the photography, I know the picture is going to come out the way that it needs to be. So I set up a photo shoot. And then after the photo shoot, I do a digital copy in a computer and I send it to them for approval, right? Based on whatever kind of design we want in the background, you know, colors, whatever. And then I send it to them for the approval, and then I start to paint it. And I also give them like a year to pay out their painting.
Oh, very good.
So they get a payment plan.
So you offer credits.
Yeah.
How many pieces are in the Guichard
show? 17 pieces there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's about 17.
So we have about 2 minutes left. Let's talk about, you know, doing the exhibit there and also other exhibits you have done.
Mm-hmm. Or what's coming up in the future?
Yeah, or what's future?
So in the future, I'm starting grad school at MICA in Baltimore, and we're actually moving in 2 weeks. So for 2 years, I'll be doing my grad studies. So for those 2 years, I plan on just doing maybe some local shows, or, you know, sending some of my work to like other galleries for exhibitions. But I don't know if I'm going to be doing anything big while I'm in school, because my primary focus is to work on my thesis and the pieces that I need for my for grad school. So my plan is to actually work on a book that's called Raising Kings and Raising Queens. And so my thesis will be based on these 12 paintings that I'm going to be creating while I'm in grad school. And if you look on my site, you'll see a painting called Raising Kings, and it's going to look similar to that. And it's going to be different families that I photograph and paint them based on, you know, their children experience, their experiences with their children.
Very good. Well, you know, we have just about a minute left, so we want people to be able to find your website, Instagram, and also whatever else is going on, how to contact you. So tell us about this.
Okay, so my my Instagram, my Facebook, and my website is Sanah, S-A-N-A-H, Brown, B-R-O-W-N, Bowers, B-O-W-E-R-S.com. And it's the same thing on Instagram and Facebook, SanahBrownBowers.com. And my website, you'll see all of my, some of my recent work, my phone number, contact information, and on my Instagram, it's the same thing. I have a lot of process videos, a lot of actually the Gouchard Gallery exhibition that we had on Friday. You'll see like some videos from there as well.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Are there Sanah Brown Bowers, artist, native of Queens, New York, but soon to be going to master's degree studies. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much, Esther. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Mr. Lowry, thank you.
Next week on Art in the Air, we have Marcy Kaufman of Feeney's Hometown Goods in New Carlisle, Indiana. Then Willow Walsh of the Shirley Hines Land Trust and their Nature and Arts events. And Janet Block for Lebesnik Art Center's Art Festival. We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. We would like to thank our current supporters and underwriters, which include regional art patron Mary Levan and Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art on the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good, and you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.